Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Anna. And we're business partners, mums, and we're also mates.
Yes, we are. But we are also chefs, taxi drivers, band-aid appliers. The list goes on. So we know that the juggle is real.
We're here to chat with you about how to find joy in the juggle, as well as bringing you all kinds of connected conversations with inspiring people who have stories of their own to tell and insight to share about how to set your soul on fire.
Also, we might throw in a swear word or some cheeky context, so perhaps if little ones are around, it's best to listen with AirPods in.
So you're... we... how do you wrap up an intro?
Anna, it is January. It is the new year. Everyone is feeling fresh and motivated and ready to write the pages of a brilliant year ahead.
That means that it is the perfect time. We were discussing in our last podcast, it's the perfect time to roll out a chat with our next guest, who is Dr. Gina Cleo, and she is at the forefront of habit research and behavioral change. So she has a PhD in habit change, which is like setting my soul on fire. And she's a professor at Bond University in Australia. She's also an accredited dietitian and the founder of the Habit Change Institution. Please correct me here, Gina, if I'm getting any of this wrong, but it's a long list of accomplishments.
You're rocking it, girl. Keep going.
Okay, good. At the Habit Change Institute is where she trains habit coaches and she supports clients and she gives keynotes on creating new habits and breaking old ones long-term, which is something I'm super excited to talk to her about, especially now that it's January.
Yay. She's absolutely also a total babe. She's very, very warm in personality. So if you've ever set a goal to start a new habit or to break an old one, perhaps you've fallen off the wagon. If you've been in a cycle of yo-yo dieting, phone scrolling or alarm snoozing, tick, 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 then today, listener, you are in the right place. Gina is here to help with evidence-based techniques to break free from unwanted habits, to teach us how to master our motivation and to navigate setbacks, which can help us achieve the lifestyle we have always dreamed of, no matter what stage of life you are in. She's amazing. Welcome, Dr. Gina Cleo.
Sarah, Anna, it is so good to be with you. I feel like I want to put you both in my pocket and take you everywhere. Whenever I'm having a low self-esteem moment, I'm like, I know Sarah and Anna are going to sort me out.
We get that a bit. Yeah. Little pocket rockets, they call us.
I love it.
Anytime.
So to start off and give a little bit of a backstory, we've just rattled off everything that you have done and currently do. Can you just let us know briefly kind of what got you into this very unique area?
Yeah, I was a dietitian as the sort of start of my career. And I found that I was, you know, helping people to achieve goals and they were going away and they were feeling great. But then inevitably they were coming back to try to work on the very same things we'd already worked on already. Uh-huh. And I started calling them frequent flyers. And I thought, the moment I know your first name as a dietitian, we've got some issues. So I became really fascinated with this idea of sustainable change. Like, how do we achieve something but maintain that change long term? I was also suffering with my own sort of disordered eating. I had all these plans to set up my day or my meal plans a certain way, and it would just never go to plan. And I was frustrated with myself. I was frustrated that I couldn't help people long term. And I was frustrated that there were no answers for what to do. And we certainly don't learn much about that sort of behavior change side of things. In either of my degrees, I did biomedical science and then I did a master's of nutrition. And even though so much about what we eat is because of why we eat, we didn't learn much of that. So I started researching. I'm a super nerd burger. So I was like reading all the articles online. And then the more I read, the more I was like, this needs exploration. Like, there's actually not a lot of data on this. And that's when I started my PhD at Bond University. I was very fortunate to be offered a scholarship to do that. So I spent 3 to 4 years running experiments on people, poking and prodding and implementing different habit change interventions. And out of that came this incredible career, because the research showed over and over again that the only proven method to long-term change is through changing our habits.
That's amazing. And probably saving some of your customers a lot of money in their hip pocket in the long run for not returning.
Exactly. I'm always like, I don't want to see you again.
I think that's great advice. If you get to know your dietitian on a first name basis, you've outstayed your welcome. You've got to learn.
Yeah, it's true. Unless you have some chronic condition that you need continuous follow-up on, but that's really like, it's not the majority of people.
Gina, I love the way that your mind works. And I love the fact that you've actually sat down and put all of your beautiful thoughts and knowledge into a book. Congratulations on the Habit Revolution.
Thank you, Sarah. It's very exciting. I never thought I'd write again after doing my PhD thesis, but here I am.
You thought you were done. I found that your book is like the perfect summer reset. When I was scrolling through Instagram, I saw last month that you actually got your book in the mail. Yes. For the first time. And I got goosebumps watching your elation. It must have been amazing as an author to actually see all of your hard work arrive in a little brown paper bag. Tell us about that.
It's so surreal. You know, I'm so the kind of person, I'm a list person. I'm like, all right, get that done. No time for celebrating. Go on to the next thing. And I can just churn through tasks without really stopping and taking a moment for it. And it's something that I've been working on. But, you know, when the book came, and I think it's because it's this physical thing, I couldn't not stop. It like forced me to stop and take a moment to be like, holy moly, my name's on this thing. And then I turned around. I was like, oh my God, my picture's on this thing. And then I opened it up and I was like, that's my story in there. And it was beautiful. And it was something I'm so proud of it. It really is my life's work put into these pages. But yeah, getting in the mail, I didn't know what to do with myself because I was like, now what? I'm like, I'm so excited. I don't want to do anything else. And I don't want to go back into work mode and spoil this moment.
Yeah.
So I sat in the hammock and read my book.
Oh, you did. It deserves to be celebrated. But I can say just watching that beautiful post on Instagram, I felt your elation and I felt proud of you as well. So congratulations on taking that moment. To explain to our beautiful listeners, let's start at the basics. What is a habit and how do we form them?
A habit is, think of a behavior that you do that you don't consciously think about. Whereas a behavior, so let's go the opposite of a habit, is something that you do consciously and deliberately think about. Things like, what am I going to wear today? What should we have for dinner? Where should we go on our next holiday? How do I drive from A to B? Those things are behaviors. They're conscious, they're intentional. You've thought about them, you've planned them. Habits, on the other hand, are the opposite of that. They're behaviors that we've repeated so often and in the same context that they become habitual or automated or subconscious. Our brain has so much thinking to do in the day. And if it was to think about every single decision consciously, we'd be exhausted. We couldn't actually survive in this world. And so our brain creates automations, which are our habits. So say, for example, as soon as you sit in the car, the first thing you do is you may put on your seatbelt or turn the car on. Those aren't things you need to do mindfully. They're things that you do automatically while you're having a chat to someone else or thinking about the next task. So those are our habits.
Okay, perfect. So they're all different. It's different to rituals. It's different to routines.
Yeah.
Habits are a thing in themselves.
Yeah. So the difference is rituals and routines are things that you do regularly, but there's still things that you could potentially do consciously. For example, I've got a habit of getting to the gym. I wake up, I put my shoes on, and I get to the gym habitually. Sometimes I'm like, how did I even get here? I don't remember driving here. But I have
Wish that was me.
You'll get there. You'll get there.
Everyone's listening going, what a bitch.
Oh my God, true. Okay, I'm not that perfect, trust me. No, no. I also sometimes eat pizza and chocolate for breakfast. I'm human, oh, I promise. But so that's my habit, is to get to the gym, but my routine in the gym is different every day. I sometimes walk in there and I'm like, oh, what do I feel like doing today? That's exercising is not a habit. Getting to the gym is a habit.
Right. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Okay. So you just mentioned that you go to the gym. I'm going to break it down and make it real here, Dr. Gina. You're the habit queen. So what are some other non-negotiables for you? I think you said in the book, 35,000 decisions we make every single day. So what are some of the good and bad habits that you have?
Me personally, ooh, do you know, these have changed throughout my life and certainly in the last few years. Okay, I'm very focused on having good mental health. And I find that if I do things that support my mental health, that tends to overflow into my physical health and my general well-being. So that's why I go to the gym. I know you're like, what a bitch, but here's the thing, right? No, I'd be the same. Don't worry. If I see people who can like say no to a second Tim Tam, and I'm like, who are you? Who wired your brain? Like, give me some of that. So I get it. But so the things I do, so definitely exercising. Before if some of my motivations weren't really what I truly valued, say I wanted to exercise for aesthetic reasons or because I should, or because it's good for my heart health, I am not overly motivated to do that. Not because I don't care about those things, I do. I just don't care about them acutely as much as I do about my mental health. So the moment I wake up and I'm like, I don't really feel like going, I'm like, but you're going to have a way better mental health day. I'm like, I'm there. Even if I'm there for 15 minutes, it doesn't matter. It's just the act of getting there really helps me. My habits really surround the idea of just showing up. And I know it sounds odd, but it's the idea of just starting something. It's starting my meal with a healthy intention. It's starting my day with exercise and then some meditation. It's starting my evening routine with properly winding down. It doesn't matter what that looks like. Sometimes it's reading, sometimes meditating, sometimes it's a bath. But my intention is to wind down in that hour before bed. And because of my personality, I actually quite like flexibility. And so I'm like, well, whatever that looks like on the day is okay. But my habit is the intention of just starting that routine.
I love that. Can you explain a little bit more in depth about your 5-second rule? Because that, when I read that, that's just kind of ingrained in me. In my house, a 5-second rule means if you've dropped a biscuit on the floor, you've got maybe 30 seconds to pick it up before the dog gets it. But your 5-second rule is a little bit different. Can you elaborate on that?
Hilarious. Okay. So the idea of the 5-second rule is that so often what gets in our way is our own mind, right? Is we want to do something and we tend to talk ourselves out of it. And the 5-second rule is essentially having a plan in place already. So, you know, say for example, it's getting up and exercise since we're on that topic, and you're going to give yourself every single excuse and reason not to do it because your brain's like, for me to do this takes energy and I'd way rather be scrolling on Facebook Marketplace because this is a way more fun time. And so the 5-second rule is just having the intention in your head, getting up and just counting down from 5 to 1 and just doing it. It's literally 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And you get up, you stop your thoughts. Now there's a caveat here. And I say this with so much caution because I'm a huge advocate for listening to our bodies and for having that self-compassion. Sometimes you're tired and sometimes you're fatigued and sometimes exercising isn't the best idea. Sometimes it's actually sleeping in. But I'm talking about those days where your excuses are actually just really lame and you have no good reason not to go and move. That's when just get up and go. Think less, do more is my motto. I've been doing this with having a cold shower in the morning. When I used to think about it, I'd like put my arm and then my second arm, I'm going to put my heel. And now I'm like, I'm just going to walk in. And because getting like your chest in is the hardest part. I could like your mid bits. Anna, have you had a story like this?
Can't believe you're saying this. Yeah, literally like the podcast before last, Sarah, that we just recorded, Sarah and I were having this discussion where I was like, I just realized I can't get into water quickly. And the worst part about it is the chest.
Rib cage.
It's all around the ribs. Like I just can't do it. And I can't, and I'm like, like you, like I will dip in and it's such a slow and painful process, like ripping the slowest band-aid in the whole world. But I
Try this.
Yeah, please.
I know. I'm open to most people are like you. I'm actually running a habit course at the moment. There are 300 women in this course. And the Facebook group, I was like, right, guys, I set them an exercise, 7 days, do a 10-second cold shower. I said, have your normal cold shower. And at the end, for 10 seconds, just turn the nozzle to cold. And the concept was around increasing our dopamine and making us feel really good for the start of the morning. And so many women were like, my arm got a cold shower today, or my foot
my
got
nose
it. I'm like, ladies.
My...
I'm like, how are those mid bits coming along? They're like, not quite there yet. And I was the same. And then one day I was like, why am I even thinking about this? sod it. I'm just going to do it. And I literally just walked in. I was like, there really requires very little emotion to do with this. This is something that's good for me. It's not harmful. I always feel fabulous afterwards. Why am I talking myself out of it? And so now I walk in, cold shower. I'm like, no, it wasn't too bad. It was actually pretty easy. And now I've almost rewired my brain so that getting my middle bits wet isn't even a barrier. It's like, I know it's fine. I survived it yesterday. My brain's not going into fight or flight. I'm good.
I love that. And how nice is it doing your face? For me, I find that so invigorating, the face under the cold water. Gina, I was telling Anna in our other podcast that I flip a coin. So if it's heads, I go cold. If not, I enjoy my warm shower.
I love it. How often would you say it goes cold?
90% of the
time. Oh, really? Oh, I was going to say, do you have a rigged coin? But I then it would be rigged the other way around.
So as far as it being, because I was saying to Sarah, I feel like it's just totally a mental thing. Like there's something that can't switch over in my brain. And we've been doing a lot of work with our people lately about neuroplasticity. And I know you'd be very familiar with that and changing the thought processes and how a lot of the time it's mind over matter. So can you maybe, just using this as the example, the cold shower thing, talk about a little bit of a brief, quick overview of the science behind as you just said, rewiring. What does that actually mean when it comes to like just going, like not doing it slowly, but just deciding to just go in?
Yeah, do it. Yeah. Okay. So when you've got a hesitation towards having the cold shower, our brain's full of associations. That's how habits are also created. But the brain is associating getting in my mid bits is something that's scary, uncomfortable, I don't want to do it, it's painful. So now your brain's like mid bits equals uncomfortable, and we don't like discomfort. And so there's going to be a natural resistance to doing it. And the more you repeat this pattern, the stronger it reinforces these cells, the neural connections in our brain. So then actually the more you do it, the longer it's going to take you to break out of that, because you're creating stronger and stronger neural connections that are saying, yo, don't do that. It's a terrible idea. But the moment you just take that step forward, figuratively and literally, into the cold water, middle bits and all, and you survive it, because that's what our brain's doing. It's essentially trying to protect us. But when you do it and you survive it and then you feel good after it, what happens is dopamine, which is what we get released. It's like dopamine's that beautiful, it's anticipation, it's reward. It helps us to feel motivated and driven, increases by 60% after a cold shower, which is why it's actually a habit that you can develop quite quickly, because habits love rewards. And so your brain's like, okay, I got cold. It was a little uncomfortable at first. I survived it. And now I feel fabulous. And our brains go, well, getting mid bits in feels fabulous. And then you start to rewire this connection of mid bits equals uncomfortable to mid bits feel fabulous. Hence the motivation to want to do it again and again. The greater reward we get from something, the more likely we are to repeat it again, which is why addictions are so addictive, is because they give us huge loads of dopamine. And so they're hard to stop. But we don't have to go that far with it. It's just going, I know that if I change the narrative with this, it's going to feel great. And I don't have to grind through it anymore. It's actually going to be something I look forward to doing.
And so the positive experience has an effect on rewiring the brain. Would the same effect happen by self-talk, like before you got in the shower saying, this is going to feel really good, or this is going to give me the dopamine?
It definitely helps. What works even more, like to supercharge it, is visualization. It's almost like a mental practice that actually can rewire your brain without even the physical act of it. So you could, as you're getting ready for your shower, literally visualize yourself walking in mid bits first, if you're game, and have a sense of like, oh, that was cold, but then enjoying it, even smile through it if you have to. Enjoy it, and then remember how good it feels afterwards. Sit in those warm, fuzzy feelings of how it feels. Our emotions drive our behavior much more than our thoughts, which is why visualization is a really powerful tool when it comes to acquiring a new habit or rewiring our brain.
Because it elicits the feelings.
You're really selling. I almost want to stop the podcast and go and have a cold shower. Right. It's like
shower break, guys. Shower break.
You're bringing back great addictions in 2024. That's going to be like,
that's what I'm about.
Other addictions, so caffeine, alcohol, screen time. Would they be the worst? What are the most common unwanted habits? Yeah.
I've asked hundreds of Australians this question because I do a lot of corporate speaking, and I'm really curious to firstly understand more about the people I'm talking to. But the biggest thing is I want them to have a shared human experience where they can see that they're not alone in the bad habits that they have, that actually their CEO and their directors and their managers and their coffee runners, everybody has the same unwanted habits. And the most common ones are checking our phone too much, staying up too late, staying in bed too long, and snacking when we're not hungry. So probably emotional eating or boredom eating. And then people also report procrastinating. Those tend to be ones. And of course, alcohol comes into it. But I'm cautious to put alcohol in the habit space when it can fall into also the addiction space.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. But well, that's really interesting because you never really think about the connect, like the overlap between habits and addictions and how they can play on each other.
Yeah. It's all about dopamine. Again, the more reward we get from something, the more likely it could be to be an addiction, which is why like methamphetamine, you don't have to do it routinely to be addicted to it. You could be addicted after one time, because there's a surge of dopamine in our brain, and then nothing in nature is going to feel quite as good as that. I'm not actually speaking from experience. I realized I was like, not speaking from experience. And I was like, that's going to sound sarcastic, but I genuinely mean it, guys. Don't do drugs.
We understand. Have a cold shower instead.
Have a cold shower. Have a cold shower. It's going to be much better for you than crack cocaine. My hot tip for 2024.
We are in January. Everybody's setting new intentions and resolutions and goals. How long is it going to take? Say, for example, I have a screen time addiction. How long is it going to take? Is it the rumored 21 days, the habit-forming timeline secret miracle, or what's your actual answer? Because you are the habit queen.
Ooh, good question. I really love debunking this myth because I think it can really empower people to keep on keeping on, because it doesn't take 21 days to change a habit, though it can. Yes, it's actually the most common myth that people will share is 21 or 28 days. Super quick background story where this came from. There was a facial reconstruction surgeon back in the 1960s who noticed that it took his patients about 3 weeks to not get a fright every time they looked in the mirror with their new face. So he was like, oh, wow. It must take neuroplasticity 3 weeks to occur. Therefore, it takes 3 weeks or 21 days to change a habit. Now, that may be relevant for his cohort of facial reconstruction patients. That is not generalizable to our behavior change in general. Neuroplasticity can take anywhere from 3 weeks to up to a year, which means that's how long it can take to change or create a new habit. There are caveats, and I talk in the book about ways we can speed it up, because I'm super impatient. I want to achieve all my goals yesterday. So I'm like, this shit can't take a year. Like, we got to go now.
Can't even take 3 weeks.
I hear your sister. Yeah,
totally. 3 weeks is too long. Let's go. And so here are the things you can do to, I guess, make it quicker. Just a really top level summary. Firstly, the more consistent you are with your habit, the quicker it'll develop, because you're reinforcing those beautiful neural pathways. Secondly, how habitual you are as a person. So the temperament that you're in. Some people are more habitual than others. They will naturally develop habits quicker, but they will also break habits slower. So there's no sort of positive and negative which end you're on. Thirdly is how stressed you are. The more stressed we are, the less likely we are to develop new neural pathways for positive behaviors. Stress tends to put us back into our already existing automative state, which means falling back onto our old habits, which is why you may have noticed in your life, if you got a really busy, like extra busy time, or you're extra stressed, or one of the kids is sick, you tend to just eat whatever's convenient. You might be less mindful. You might be more snappy. because we have less resilience in those times. And it's completely normal. You know, we're ego depleted, our self-control depletes, and we fall back into old habits. So the more stressed you are, the longer it takes to develop a habit. And then the other one is intention. The more intention you have towards creating your new habit, the stronger you want it, the more you think about it, you write it down, you tick it off when you've done it, really focus on that one thing, the quicker it'll be for you to develop. And the last one actually is complexity. If you're trying to change a really complex habit, like you're trying to, I don't know, let's say perfect a deadlift with 100 kilograms.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's going to take you. Yeah, I've done that. It's going to take you a lot longer than, say, the habit of drinking a glass of water with breakfast every morning. Water is a simple act. It's available anywhere. You know, wherever you are, you can access it. It doesn't take a lot of preparation. Whereas perfecting a deadlift, you have to think about all your body parts, your breathing, your bracing. Perfecting a deadlift will take about a year. It took me two. And glass of water, you could probably do it in a couple of weeks.
I have to say, it will take you less than a year if you're a pro at miscalculating the weights when you put them on, because the fastest way to have a PB is to not know what you're lifting.
It's also the fastest way to a professional back injury for the rest of your life.
Yes, it's true. Imagine you're like fully bracing, getting ready, and then you've lifted this 20 kilogram bar. You probably hit yourself in the hip.
I'm just imagining tiny Gina lifting 100 kilos. I'm not saying that's not possible, but it's just.
It's so funny you say that. I started powerlifting a few years ago. I was living in a suburb where it was the only gym around was a powerlifting gym. And I was like, all right, it's not really my jam.
My option.
Like, I've kind of got like thin limbs, but yeah, it's what we're working with here. And I only went because it was a 30-day free trial and I absolutely loved it. Look, 2 years, two years into it, I was like, this is really not for me. Took me another 2 years to realize my injuries are like crying. Oh. And so I stopped after 4 years. God. But my PB was 120 kilograms.
Wow. You are very happy. You get more and more.
Twice my body.
Now, next time we have to introduce you, it's going to get even more and more impressive as this interview goes on. You have to add to the list.
What a unit.
My knees, though, I mean, no, I shouldn't have done
it's taken me a year and I still have to think. I've still got to think every single part of my body. And then, it's hard work.
Yeah. But have you found, Sarah, like from the very first time you did the deadlift to say now, there are parts of that movement that are automated?
Absolutely. My toes go up. Yeah. I almost look like a little duck when I get the bar. You know, I've got these, it's almost like a little dance that I do before I brace to breathe to lift. And I had no idea what I was doing. And it's taken me a lot of repetition, but I'm getting there. But I don't know how some people just go and do it straight away. Baffles me.
No, they don't. They've been practicing for years. That's how it's like driving a car. When you first learned to drive a car, it would have been, you know, it messes with your head. You're like, there's so many pedals and there's make sure I don't crash into anyone. You're really constant. You're engaging every single brain cell to do this.
Yeah.
And now you probably drive to places and you're like, I don't remember how I got here. Like it was very mindless act is driving now. Mm. That's because our brains created automations in the process. Now, if there was, say, a hazard, you would come back into your mindful mind because you have to now change the behavior. It's not just the automation thing. And then you'd fall back into, I'm just cruising down the freeway or wherever it is. I don't have to think too much about it.
Mm. Okay. So we've just come out of Christmas and it's summer and talking about automation. Anna and I have been talking about how it's almost becoming automation to drive into Dan Murphy's a couple of times a week. And pour ourselves a nice cold glass of something. How would one pull back on that particular habit? Yeah, we tend to overdo everything at Christmas time. Things, you know, sneak in, drink, food, a little bit of laziness. So how do we change the habit?
I guess there's different degrees to the habit, right? And different goals that you may have. Like you may think, I'm happy to drink regularly. I just don't want to drink as much as I'm drinking. Or you may think, I don't want to drink at all. You know, there's going to be different interventions for the different goals that you have. But I can give you a few examples. I love myself a glass of red wine, especially Madhubala where I live. I've got a fireplace and it's so nice to kick back to a glass of red. but I know how much alcohol impacts my sleep.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And my sleep is
me too.
It's the number one priority for me. Cause again, if I don't sleep well, my mental health suffers mm-hmm. and my work suffers, my relationship suffers. I just feel blah and I don't want to do it consistently. And so I got a Fitbit and it tells me, you know, my REM and deep sleep. And I noticed that I had like nearly no REM sleep, no deep sleep, like beautiful restorative sleep that we get goes out the window whenever I have any sort of alcohol. That has helped me to not really drink much alcohol. Again, it's that coming back to my values. Now, if it's, you know, an occasion, I'll have a glass. I'll try to have it earlier in the day so my body's sort of metabolized it before bed. But I know that it's not going, you know, I always ask myself, what's the cost? Okay, the cost is tomorrow I'm going to feel lousy. It's going to impact my sleep, which actually shrinks my brain and does all these things, like a complete cascade of events. Is having this glass of wine worth it? Every now and then I say yes, but most of the time I'm like, it's really not. Like, I'm okay to not have it. So that's sort of those milder ends. I had a client I worked with, I'll call her Vanessa, and actually share the story in the book. Vanessa had a habit of having a glass, pouring a little bit of glass of wine every night after work. And it was sort of like, put the kids to bed, finally sit and wind down.
That's your reward.
Yeah, yeah. Her reward. It's loved it. Common. Yeah. But her cardiologist was concerned about her heart health. And she also wanted to reduce the amount she was drinking. She'd find herself though, she'd come home and without even thinking about it, she's got that glass and she's next minute, she's poured herself the wine. She's on the couch. She's halfway through the glass. Then she's like, oh my goodness, I've told myself that I would cut this down and I'm still doing it. So that's when you really know it's a habit, that whole mindlessness of getting into it. I do that with like a packet of chips. I'm like halfway through it. I'm like, right, what am I doing? How did I even get here? Exactly. So this is what I did with Vanessa. The trigger for her was, you know, that rest time at the end, putting the kids to bed and they're just resting. So what I did with her is, because the start of the habit was so strong, I moved all her wine glasses from where they are into a different cupboard and I put all the tea mugs there. And then I moved the wine bottle into the garage where she had to get a stepladder to access it. It was still there. She could still get it whenever she wanted to, but there's now barriers to it. So the first night she went over and grabbed the glass of wine. Well, she thought, and she's like, oh, there's tea mugs here. And it reminded her that, hey, we're changing the habit here. So changing your environment. Yeah. And then I also got her to do something different. So I was like, you normally sit and have a glass of wine and watch telly. Why don't you have a cup of tea and read or sit outside or do something else to shift your environment? Because our environment, it has all these habits that are associated with it. So she did that and it's worked an absolute charm. And she's like, one night I came home, I was like, I really wanted a glass of wine. I even got the glass out and then I walked over to the garage and I was like, oh, I can't be bothered getting the step ladder and doing all that. And she's like, and then I went back, I had a tea and I was so happy I did.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then that was the first part of the rewiring process,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
You're I'm adding genius to your rap sheet here, Gina. Next time we introduce you, we're going to need an hour.
Oh my goodness, I'm putting you double time in my pocket, Sarah. We are going everywhere together, my girl.
But yeah, that's 100%.
Careful, you'll want to take her out after a while. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay,
I've had her in for a few years.
Yeah, you're not getting rid of me anytime soon. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And a lot of these habits are automated. Perhaps she can do something else, like have a cup of tea as that wind down. That's amazing.
And it had to be something that helps her wind down. You know, people say if you're wanting to eat when you're not hungry, because say you're craving sugar and, you know, you want to eat something there, instead of they'll say things to you like, call a friend or walk outside. That doesn't work because it's not going to give you the reward that your brain is seeking, which is satisfying that sweet tooth. So you might then, if you had, say, a piece of fruit or a little bit of the dessert rather than the whole amount, that's going to work for you to start to rewire that brain. You have to address the reward. Otherwise, you're left feeling like empty crap. That's why we go back to doing the things that we don't want to do because they feel good. Scrolling on our phone makes our brain feel good in the moment.
We have released our 2024 Bali Reset Retreats, and to celebrate, we're giving away two tickets for you and a friend to come join us.
This is a once in a leap year giveaway, so naturally, the winner will be drawn on February 29th. So make the most of this leap year by investing in yourself for a change.
You could win a trip to join us for 4 days of incredible connection, restful rejuvenation, and fascinating implementation of cutting-edge neurosciences that will have you kicking some serious goals in both work and in your life.
These hugely successful retreats are for anyone who feels like they're pouring from an empty cup. I know that's definitely me. And just need a freaking minute.
And a nap.
And a swim.
And a light bulb moment.
And a massage.
Oh yeah, and a dance.
And a laugh.
And another nap.
You get it.
Really, this is for anyone who wants to escape the chaos and do all of the re's, like relax,
reset,
rejuvenate,
release,
recover,
reevaluate,
reinvest,
remember,
and reclaim.
It's a retreat like nothing else you've seen in Bali, a unique approach that we call Choose Your Own Adventure that blends fascinating neurosciences and targeted life and work analysis to actually get you reaching the goals that you set for yourself with a side of meditation and cocktails by the pool.
And if you're thinking about coming along, do it. Just go purchase a ticket now. You can still be in the draw. And if you win, we'll refund you the prize amount. You can enter the draw by visiting us at www.theworkwives.com.au or by checking out our Instagram post at the.work.wives.
We really, really want to see you there and give you a squeeze, slap you on the bum and jump in the pool with you. Consensually, of course. In your book, there's a whole chapter on mastering motivation, which is a real area of interest to me because I know there's a lot of competing thoughts about motivation versus discipline versus which is, you know, harnessing it all and making it work together. Can you dive a bit into that and let us know, like, is it possible? Can we harness motivation?
Yeah. I feel like we could talk for 10 hours about motivation, you and I, Anna.
Yes.
I think there are some really deep myths about motivation in our society, and motivation is something that we depend so much on and we depend too much on. I think especially the start of the new year, I feel like the turn of the year, we feel like it's going to come with this whole, like a zap of motivation is going to slap us across the face and make us feel like we're ready to tackle these big goals. But the reality is we're going to be no less tired, we're not going to be any less busy, and we're not going to be any more motivated. The thing with motivation is it's like a wave. It comes, it goes from not just day to day, but from moment to moment.
And I think that's the biggest misconception is that people wait for their motivation to come to do something.
Yeah.
And they can't rely on it staying.
Exactly right. I sort of describe it as a friend who sometimes ghosts you and sometimes rocks up. You don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think the greatest motivation myth, and I was so grateful to be able to write about this in my book, is exactly like you said, Anna, we often wait for motivation to start something. The myth is actually that, because motivation often comes as a result of action. Action is a prerequisite to motivation. Think of the last time you did not feel like exercising, and then you did, and then you started moving your body. 5 minutes into that workout, you're so stoked you're there.
I'm going to do this again tomorrow.
Exactly. You're totally into it. Yeah. Because you took action and then the motivation followed, because sometimes our brain just needs to remember that this feels good. This is good for us. Whether it's exercise or not doing the thing that you said you wouldn't. If say you say, I don't want to scroll on my phone, and you decide not to, you're going to get a sense of achievement, and that's going to take a few minutes to get there. But once you're there, you'll be motivated to not do it again because you've now got a reward from doing that. So there is, most of the time, the things that we need to do, especially things that are not habits, you will want to wait for motivation, but you will need to take action without motivation. And it's such a mind shift. And this comes back to think less, do more. Just take the first step, just show up, and the motivation will come up.
Jump in the cold shower.
Get mid bits first.
Without thinking about it. Yeah, mid bits first.
And your 5-second rule, eat the cake off the floor. I mean, just do it.
Both of those work.
You've got a lovely chapter also about setbacks. And I think a lot of people will be listening to you and they're fist pumping themselves going, yeah, girlfriend, I can do this in January. But by February, a bit of their own setbacks have come and sort of tapped them on the shoulder. You're very open to talking about your own trauma and how that's held you back. Would you like to elaborate a little bit on that and how that can help our listeners' mindset?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. It's so funny. We've been like, you know, talk about like genius and all this stuff on the pod. And it's so funny because I came from a place where, honestly, no lie, brushing my teeth in the morning is something I had to stop and celebrate because that's all I could do on that particular day. So a few years ago, I found out that my ex-husband was having an affair. So he was going to brothels and hiring escorts and prostitutes and sex workers. And
what a dick.
Yeah, he was super dick. We were together for 6 years. We'd just been married for 6 months. And I thought things were great. But in the year sort of before the breakup, things felt distant. We felt like something was critically wrong and I couldn't put my finger on it. And he would just say things to me like, I have depression, or COVID's really messing with my work, or I miss my family. I can't see them because they're interstate. So it all made sense. And I just continued to support him further and further. So whenever he did something that's sort of odd, I'd be like, well, he's going through depression. So that's understandable. So there's all this gaslighting going on. And then one day I was in my kitchen and I was like, I'm going to bake. Baking's sort of like my creative outlet. And his computer was on the kitchen bench and I opened it. I looked up a recipe and these text messages started to come up, which was a live exchange that he was having between himself and a sex worker that he was just about to meet with. She'd sent him photos.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, she sent him photos. He commented on the photos, which really hurt. They talked about money. She sent the address and he said, I'm outside. So this was all standing in the kitchen reading this.
Having a meltdown.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually hyperventilated and I fainted.
Yeah.
My beautiful doggy, Macy Gray, she broke the door down and came and sort of woke me up.
Oh, she broke the door.
She did.
Down.
She broke the door. Dogs can actually smell cortisol. They can smell. Yeah. Trauma hormones essentially. And then I opened the computer again and I saw a flurry of more images, more text messages. He was on dating apps. He's watching a lot of pornography like during work. It was wild. The other betrayal part of this, and then I'll sort of move into how I got through this time, is ever since I was quite young, I was 16, I did my very first volunteer trip overseas and my passion really became rescuing women out of the sex trade. I grew up in Egypt where, you know, women are more oppressed than in comparison to men. Yeah. And then when I moved into the Western world, I was like, okay, women can have rights. This is awesome. And I sort of came home to myself from that experience. But then when I learned there was such a thing as sex trafficking, I was like, oh, hell no. Like, something's going to be done about this. So I volunteered and, you know, a lot of the Southeast Asian countries are still very much active in donating to organizations that help these women. The biggest betrayal out of all of this was that the women that my ex was choosing to engage with were the exact women I was working to rescue out of the sex trade. They were trafficked in from Southeast Asia. They earn $20 a day, you know, they're slaves.
And he was obviously fully aware of the fact that you were advocating against.
What a great cover up for his actions, right?
Wow.
Like, I'm with the girl who cares so much about this, so there's no way I'd be doing this. Yeah. So there was that. And so when I first realized, I took all these screenshots, I sent them to my mom, and I was like, don't call, but something's going down. And then I called him. I said, there's something I need to speak to you about. Can you please come home? And he'd finished. I knew that he only paid for a 15-minute treatment. So I knew that he was on his way.
Wow.
Yeah. Tight ass.
You know, all round, which is good, tight ass.
It's my money, so what? Jeez. So when he came home, I was mindful to be really calm, sort of that behavioral scientist came into mind, like, I can't accuse, I can't yell, I can't swear, I can't be too emotional. Mm-hmm. So it's totally self-regulated. And I just sat on the bench and I just said, is there something you need to tell me? And he denied. And I said, have you had any special treatments lately? And he's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. And I was like, okay. And then I showed him all the photos that I'd seen. I was like, well, what about this? And what about this? And he continued to lie about it. He continued to say, I love you way too much to do anything like that. I had the intention of going, but I love you way too much. I just stood outside and I was like, I'd never do that to my wife. And I came straight home to you. And I'm like,
they really try it on, don't they? Right?
For years, buddy, like for a whole year, you've been standing outside and deciding to come home.
Kept doing it, kept paying.
I'm surprised you were so calm because you're obviously just going through so much emotion. You're angry probably at yourself, but you've done nothing. It must have just been absolutely mortifying.
It was horrid. I've actually, oddly enough, I don't know what happened in my brain at that time, but I went into full survival mode. I audio recorded the conversation. I was like, in case something happens, like he is the calmest, most gentle, most loving, most generous human being. He was such a gentle man. I never thought that something like this would happen, but I was like, but I don't actually know who he is. And so anything could happen. So I audio recorded it as a place of evidence in case something was to happen.
Wow.
And I think part of my calmness was my fear. I went into my room and I was wailing. I was on my hands and knees wailing. And he went into the spare room and watched a movie. Like he was completely dissociated. Yeah, it was so bad. And then the next morning he woke up, he packed his bag and he just said to me, the only words he spoke was, I'm not worthy of being in the same room as you. And he left. And for the weeks following this like horrible incident, I'll track back, but basically I was sort of holding on to hope that we could still work things out. I adored this man. Oh my goodness. I loved him so much. We were trying for a baby. He was like everything I've ever wanted in a human being. My parents adored him. My family adored him. 6 years, we built a life together. You know, he is my beneficiary on my superannuations. He's my person. Mm-hmm. And we just bought this beautiful home. We bought our dream home. We have the dream dog. We had the dream careers. Like everything was going for us. I didn't understand. And we had a good sex life. So I'm like, what went wrong? Mm. And then after, so 5 weeks later, during this time, I'm really trying to just figure my shit out. But 5 weeks later, I went over to where he plays tennis on Thursday nights. And I went over to him after the tennis match. It's the first time I'd seen him after he walked out, and I just wanted to see him just to be like, what's happening? Because he's no communication, right? And he bawled his eyes out. He fell into my arms and he said, I want you back so bad. I'm so sorry. Let's work through this. Let's go to therapy. I miss you more than anything. And I was like, great. I'm totally open to this. But if we're doing this, you can't be dating as well. Like you have to be all in. And he's like, of course, you're the only person for me. I'm not dating anyway. And then 24 hours later, a friend of mine happened to accidentally go to the wrong restaurant at the wrong time in a different city.
Oh, stop. Yeah. No, yeah. No accident about that.
Oh, yeah. And she saw him with his hands all over this other woman. She took videos and photos and sent them to me. I saw them the next morning and I called him and I was like, never, ever, ever speak to me again. Like, you actually are a horrible human being. In what happened in those weeks and months is my mind felt fractured. If I was so wrong about him, like he is honestly the last person. He's a person I'd be like, some people are capable of things. He's not one of those. Like he's not capable of doing something like that. He was so affirming of the relationship every day. Like, can't wait to come home to you. I love you so much. You're the best wife. Love bombing galore, like sprinkle me with the love bombs. This was my life. And so I felt like it was so, so, so wrong about this. What else am I wrong about? And it became like, is the sky even blue? Are my parents even my parents? Like, Is brushing my teeth even a good idea? I have absolutely no idea. I have no true north. I have no foundation. And I can't trust my mind anyway, because my mind thought one thing and now it's not true at all. And it's like I cracked. I was bedridden. I developed agoraphobia, which is the fear of leaving my own house. And everything reminded me of him, and the memory of him triggered a panic attack. And when I say everything, I'm talking like white Sheridan sheets, the smell of coffee, chicken schnitzel, which was his favorite food.
Wow.
Chicken schnitzel.
I know, right? Black cars. Like I was like constantly in this state of
unavoidable.
Panic. Yeah.
Yeah. Unavoidable stuff.
Hence why I couldn't leave my house. So through that process, I did a whole lot of therapy. I did a lot of exposure therapy to be able to, you know, enter the world and not feel like the world's a scary or terrible place. And then I did lots more therapy, which I'm still doing. And it's been so amazing. It's really been a game changer. But the biggest thing in that moment is I realized I'd lost associations. When we talk about habits, we have associations like morning equals coffee or nighttime equals brushing our teeth. I lost all of the connections of what it felt like at the time because I didn't trust anything anymore. And so I had to think my way into doing every single thing again. And it started with brushing my teeth. I was like, okay, I'm just going to brush my teeth today. And that's all I need to do. And I'm pretty sure that's a good idea. And so I did. And then the next day, and that's all I do. The next day I'd get up and I'd be like, okay, I'm brushing my teeth and I'm going to have a shower today. And I noticed the second day brushing my teeth was easier than the first day. And it was easier again the third day and the fourth day. And I'm like, oh, this is this neuroplasticity stuff I've been preaching about for so long. I can actually feel it. And then I had a thought of, I can rewire my brain. I know exactly how to do this. And if I can't do this, I'm quitting habits, because if I can't rewire my brain, I can't help anyone. And I started this journey of baby steps, micro habits, a ton of self-compassion, letting go of the idea of trying to bounce back to where I was, because that was not going to happen. And, you know, as successful as I am now, as much as I can do now, there are still days where I'm like, my resilience is low, my capacity is lower, because I've had to work through a trigger, and that's going to be emotionally exhausting. And so I'm like, it's okay if I, you know, binge out on pizza for the next hour. Like it's okay for me to do that, because it's not my everyday and it's all right. So I just worked my way back into my life again.
Did you find that there was a certain point, or was it more of a gradual thing where you recognize that you trust yourself again?
I think I still struggle with that, to be honest.
Right.
I feel like I would trust myself for sort of basic things, but then I question a lot about, well, is that really your intention? And like, why really? Like, so I'm remarried, something I never, ever thought would happen.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Mitchell and I eloped in Mexico only a couple of months ago.
Oh my gosh.
He got a new phone this week, and you know, it prompted him to change his password from 4 to 6 digits. My head was like, there's a story going on here, and it's got nothing to do with the fact that you got a new phone. Because I've got a new phone, I've still got 4 digits, but I remember, no, I did have to change it. And so I will sit with him and I'll say, there's a story in my head. It's not the reality, but I just need that validation from you. And then he's like, hey, here's my new password. Yeah, this is why this happened. And so there are still times when I don't trust myself, because my heart's like, no, he'd never do that to you. But my head's like, oh, yes, he would. Anyone would do that to anyone.
Yeah.
I find that the people around me who have the most capacity for growth are the ones who do question what's around them, but are also equally happy to question themselves and question their own intentions and self-reflect. I think that's a huge part of growth. And I think if you have that balance, there is some benefit in not just implicitly trusting everybody. Like Sarah and I historically have been like that, where just we give people the benefit of the doubt, and sometimes that has bitten us.
Yeah.
So I think there has to be a healthy dose of skepticism when you're approaching any interaction, even the people you know or think you know.
Mm.
But there's also just as much validity in stepping back and going, maybe this is something that I'm that is not reasonable for me,
yeah,
and why and how. And I think that's where healthy growth comes from.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. And I think, and it's only been through positive experiences that I've been able to rewire those, like those neurons. It's only been through noticing the times that Mitch does do something that's really honoring without knowing that I would notice it, or the times where I've thought something about someone and it's been accurate. And those are those positive reinforcements that have helped me go, okay, I can trust myself. The other thing that did help me is I spoke to she's a psychologist that works in criminology, and this person
is very interesting.
Yeah, super interesting. She's a friend of mine, and her job is to speak to people who have been incarcerated for 20 years or more to identify through an interview if they're likely to reoffend or not if they were to be released in the community. This is in America. And I said to her, what did I miss? I mean, I would notice a blink out of time. What did I miss? How can I not do this again? And she's like, you didn't miss anything. These people make sure that their lives in every avenue get you to dead ends whenever you try to question something. And actually then you become the crazy person the moment you do ask something, because they love you so much and they're so committed. And, you know, he helps your dad fix his boat on the weekends. How could he be spending the weekend with another date? And it was really validating. I'm like, okay, because when I think about it, if I was to go back, I wouldn't have picked anything odd.
He's like a master of his craft. I'm so glad that your friend called him out and saved you, and now you have Mitch. Yeah. I feel old mate went from the penthouse to the shit house, and it was Mitch's game.
It's so true. Now Mitch is in the dream house with a dream dog, Macy Gray, and me, the dream.
I feel like, you know, you hear of people like Richard Branson saying, you know, I wouldn't be the person I am now if I hadn't have hit bankruptcy three times. But it's a terrible lesson for you to learn in your own craft and your own mastery for this to happen. It's almost like ironic and uncanny that you had to go and retrain your brain to just have simple daily habits once again.
Yeah, it's true. And look, I still wouldn't have picked it. You know, I would have really liked to rewire my brain in a different way, only because there are certainly long-term consequences to what happened to me. You know, I lost all my eggs, for example. I had to freeze whatever eggs I had straight away. I still get, you know, the odd nightmare because the PTSD can be like obviously ongoing. It's very minor. It doesn't impact my everyday life. But I know what trauma does to the brain. We have a reduced prefrontal cortex, which is our thinking brain, a higher level of action in our amygdala, which is our emotional brain. I have to work on regulating myself sometimes through triggers. And that takes energy. And it's less and less as time goes on. But say I've had a shitty night's sleep, or I had a fight with Mitch and I'm already heightened, my threshold is not as high as it used to be. So yeah,
it's shitty that you have to do the work that he did to you. You know, if you decided to go out there and drink alcohol and, you know, whatever, you know, watch videos or, you know, whatever it is, but you're having to do the work for somebody else's shitty decisions.
I know. And I think that's why I really threw myself into therapy. And it was the quote that I read, and it was, your trauma is not your fault, but your healing is your responsibility.
Yes.
Oh, I love that.
And I was like, right, I just need to do this. And I didn't quit work. I put my work on hold, and I was in full-time therapy. I'm talking like every day I was getting exposure therapy. It wrecked me, but it was the best thing I've ever done. And I was like, I just need to get back. So I need to come home to myself.
Yeah, absolutely. So the book that you have developed now through your experiences and your education, there's so much that we've been getting out of this conversation. Yeah. But if somebody's wanting to learn something from you through this book, what would the book help them with?
Ooh, there's so many nuggets in this book that I really love. And I think different parts will really resonate with different people. But the thing that I find that a lot of people get out of this is this idea of taking small steps. And, you know, had you said to me in the start of, you know, my trauma, all right, Gina, we need to go, we need to get up, go to the gym and just do one work day. I couldn't have done it because I'm like, well, I don't even know how to brush my teeth right now. Like, we need to slow down. I would have given up. But had I been okay with the baby steps, had I accepted that brushing my teeth is the only thing I need to achieve today, then I was happy to do the journey. And now I'm in a healthier place, both in my mental and my physical health, than I was pre this trauma. Starting small is a really great idea. I think it's a beautiful notion and we like how gentle it seems, but it is damn hard to do because we want to achieve our goals straight away. And sometimes starting small feels futile. It feels like a waste of time, like it's not progress. But I think the biggest thing to remember is that it's through starting the habit that our brain rewires and consistently then reinforces the habit. It's the routine of getting to the gym, not exercising, that we need to work on. So start, no matter how small it is. It doesn't actually matter how small it is. Just take the first step. The first step's the hardest. So if you just focus on that being the goal, that's going to be the biggest winner, because then that's going to cascade into the habit you want to create. So I think the biggest thing is the book really helps guide the reader through these myths that we have, these societal expectations of go hard or go home, or if your dreams don't scare you, they're not big enough. I unpack that and I'm like, all right, here's two scenarios. If you did that, this is what would happen. But if you did it like this, this is what the possibilities are. And so I think it's a gentle friend.
I love that. If some of us may potentially be type A personalities and they like to take on a few things at once, speaking again for a friend, how many habits is too many habits to start or to try and hone in on at once?
Our brains are only capable of changing up to three things at one time. And as a fellow potential type A, who knows, we'll let the listeners decide. I was like, I'm a high achiever. I've got this. I'm a habit expert. I'm going to try five. And I'm going to try five really little things, like two glasses of water first thing in the morning, 10 minutes of meditation, you know, a gratitude journal, blah, blah. I did these five little things. And I was using a habit tracker to track how I was going. And after a couple of weeks, I'm like, not really being that consistent with it. I'm noticing big gaps in my tracker. I'm like, okay, I'll cut it to four. So then I tried four. And although I was more consistent with some of the habits, it still felt like it's constantly something I have to think about. And I wasn't achieving every day. I'm like, all right, maybe the science is right. And I cut it down to three and voila, all the habits. I was just like a streak of ticks for all the habits I was achieving. I was like, righto, last time I questioned neuroscience.
I love that the scientist is trying to debunk science.
Of course, that's what we do. We ask questions, we push boundaries. So fellow type A's, three max. And I actually would say, and the research shows this, is that if you just focus on one thing at a time, you're much more likely to not only start it, but to continue doing it. And then once that starts to feel somewhat natural, like it's an okay or a common part of your routine, start another one. But don't start more than one thing at a time.
Oh, you're killing me here, Gina, but okay. If you say it, I will take it on board.
I promise you.
You're the queen.
You've been doing it the other way for all this time. Has it worked for you?
Yeah, probably not. Yeah, next question. Habit stacking. So I've got three kids, two horses, you know, life is bonkers. So if I go down and put the kettle on, for example, pop the vitamins, do a few squats, is that scientifically a good thing to get into? Or are you going to tell me that that's going to wear off soon too?
I love it. Habit stacking is a term that was, I guess, recently popularized through the book Atomic Habits. It's actually not a scientific term. You won't find the term habit stacking in any of the sort of research. But the idea of it is really around the habit loop. And it's that every habit has a trigger, then the habit, and then the reward. And essentially what habit stacking is, it's identifying something that you're already doing, like turning on the kettle, and then attaching a habit that you want to stack on to that. And that's what the habit loop is. So that totally works. The only time it sort of doesn't work is if you're trying to do mismatched stacks. So say you're like, when I have a shower, I'm going to floss my teeth. well, that doesn't really make sense. It would make much more sense of if when I go to brush my teeth, I'll floss my teeth. They have to sort of match. So I find where a lot of people get lost is, oh, I have this habit and I'm going to stack this one onto it. And it is a mismatch. And then you get frustrated with yourself. But really, we just need to create a flow in what we're doing. And then, yes, it will last, which I'm sure you'd be happy to hear, Sarah. It will last.
Thank you.
With consistency and persistence.
Okay. Just don't floss the teeth on the toilet, people.
No point.
That's where you'll get tripped up.
Literally.
So one of the things that we ask each other every week and that we've been asking the people who we've been chatting to on here is a really big theme for us and our listeners is what has to give. So it's really easy for us to be able to see somebody like yourself smashing goals, three habits at a time, publishing books and going around doing amazing speaking engagements and running workshops for people and all of this stuff that makes it look like you're just on top of your life right now. But we know that any busy woman, no matter what's in their life, we say the juggle is real and something always has to give, whether it's the pile of washing that's just out of sight or that it's takeaway for a third night in a row. So we like to ask each of the people who we're chatting to, what is it that has to give for you right now?
Love that. I love the acknowledgement of that. I'm a real big fan of outsourcing. And so I outsource a lot of things. I have a cleaner. My husband does all the cooking and all the laundry. The other day I walked into the laundry and he's like, are you lost? I'm like, whoa, hang on. A bit harsh, but yes, I am.
This one is a keeper.
It's great. And when he's away, my beautiful mum makes meals and it's just so much easier. She loves it. I love it. I will take my dog down to the dog park and sometimes I will take my laptop and if I've got that last few emails, I will get it done there rather than say walking and then having to do the emails when I get home later. So I try to really cut off work time again, because sleep is my priority, not to do it too close to bed. The things that never give are my sleep, my exercise, and eating well. Those things I will never give up for anything. And it's actually sometimes what has to give are contracts. I've been offered big, great contracts to do work on projects with some of Australia's biggest companies, but the deadlines that they had and the requirements that they needed, I was like, I could do this, but I'll burn myself out. And is it worth it? No, it's absolutely not. So what gives sometimes is extra money, and I'm okay with that because I love my lifestyle and I wouldn't give that up for anything.
I love that. It really is a life by design. And we've been talking a lot lately about how empowering it is for women to turn down big opportunities or careers for the life that you actually want to live. What's it all for if we don't live the life that we want to have?
What do you both say to this question? What gives for you?
It depends on any given week. So for me, sometimes it's the kids get takeaway. Currently, it's definitely my housekeeping. I really need to start from one corner today and move through the entire house. Sometimes I'm like, I'm on fire. I've got my shit together. So I think it varies on any different week, depending on what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I've recently hired an assistant who does so much more of the stuff that I'm like, I can do this, but I don't enjoy doing it. And it's causing me to want to procrastinate. And I hate that feeling because I want to be productive. And it's been a game changer. She's actually a dietitian that studied neuroscience.
Oh, wow.
And has a real interest in habits. And she's like my right hand gal. And the other day I was like, how do you feel about adding life admin to the tasks? And she's like, oh, that's fine. I'm like, great. Can you research health insurance for me?
What a protege. What a protege. She can double up for you for these events soon that you're not wanting to take. And then she can also organize your dry cleaning. I mean, I'm just adding
brilliant,
genius times 10. On
Sarah, now I've got three of you in my pocket.
We also love to ask our guests about what's happening in their life at the moment that's bringing them joy. So we'd like to ask you, Gina, what is it that is currently setting your soul on fire?
Oh, Okay, I can give you the cliche answer, which is like the sunshine because it's summer and I love this weather. But honestly, the first thing that came to mind, and this might sound really odd, but I was contacted by Sonata Greaser, who is Kim Kardashian's personal trainer, a few months ago. And she said to me, I want to work with you. I'm creating a new app and I'd love, it's a women's empowerment app, and I'd love for you to be one of the key pillars in it. And I just thought, I actually thought I was being trolled. I was like, whoever's on the other end of the Zoom is going to be some, I don't know, Nigerian man. Like, I don't think it's really going to be her, but it was. And the thing that brought me joy is, yes, we are working together now, which is awesome. And we're launching an app, but her business advisor said to her, Gina's in Australia, you're in LA, and they're based in London. They're like, she's too far away. You need to find another Gina somewhere else. And this is with a company called Genflow. It's one of the biggest content creators in the world. They're so well connected. They spent 2 weeks trying to find a Gina on the northern side of the hemisphere and they couldn't. And they came back to me and they're like, you're our person. No one else has a PhD in habits. No one delivers the content like you. And that was such a moment. I thought, whether I sign this contract with them or not, it's the fact that I was valued for the work that I do. Yeah. And the fact that validation. I was seen like that,
yes,
was a really beautiful moment. It's something I've been very mindful to be grateful for and to sit with in that moment and be like, you freaking made it. Like, that's a really cool moment. Yeah.
Yeah. That is a super cool moment.
Yeah. There's glimpses of joy from that experience. Yeah.
Mm. Well, congratulations. Amazing. Good things really do happen to good people.
Thank you.
And I love that you are so inspiring to women and that you are, you know, just so incredibly refreshingly honest. I think you're just so incredibly relatable. So congratulations. That's awesome. I'm really proud of you.
Thank you so much. Best friend. Oh, I know. We're just going to like build a tunnel between our houses in Madhubba. You just slide on in. You'll be in my backyard. I'm like, oh, Sarah's here. Great. I'm ready. My self-esteem is ready for you.
She'll do it.
Down the wine glass. Let's go for the tea.
Yes, exactly. No wine here.
Now, for anybody who's listening who they also can't go down my private slippery dip to Gina's house, anybody else who wants to get more of you, you have courses running. How can people find out about those courses and what are your courses offer?
Yeah, thank you. So if you jump onto my website, which is drginaclio.com, I've got a couple of courses. There's ones that are for everyday people that are interested in creating healthier habits and breaking their old unwanted habits.
I'm about to do that one.
Ooh, juicy. Oh my gosh, how exciting. I'm gonna do it. Also like why self-control doesn't work and what to do about it and how to bounce back from a setback, which is an inevitable thing that will happen to all of us. So that's the course. And then the other course is a train the trainer. So it's actually a teacher training. It's teaching people who want to be coaches, want to be habit coaches, certified habit coaches, so that they can help other people. So that's the other course. And that's called the Habit Practitioner course. That one has been incredible. We have students from all around the world, literally every continent apart from Antarctica right now, doing habit courses. And a lot of them, English isn't their first language, but they're getting through it. And it's been really cool. I'm also on Instagram. All my socials are Dr. Gina Clio. So come, I will reply to every one of your emails personally and I love connecting. So please do come and say hi.
We've loved following you on there. I'm very excited to sign up in the new year for your Creating Healthier Habits series. And anyone else who obviously wants to join me on that, I might keep us updated during the podcast about how I'm going. But as soon as I read it, I was like, I need to do that. I feel like the new year, it is a good time to harness that excitement for implementing better strategies. And that course is like just looked like the perfect opportunity to be able to do that. Aww, just to start it off right.
That's awesome.
And I read that you have a beautiful online community so everybody can share and grow and kind of feel like they're not in it alone. Yeah. So I've been reading how powerful that is and that to your testament as well that you're in there all the time just breaking it down and talking to people one-on-one. So that's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. And that's probably one of the best parts of the Creating Healthy Habits program is this beautiful community of truly like-minded people that are just so here to encourage, and it's been really beautiful. So yeah, thank you both.
That's all right.
You're welcome. And the Habit Revolution, Gina's brand new book, where she has basically, it's like this the pensive sieve in Harry Potter. She's put it to her head and put all of her thoughts into an amazing book, is out now. As I said, it's an amazing summer reset. And it's also a nice little Bible that you can have beside the bed when you might not quite have your crap together. You can pick it up and take off where Dr. Gina has told you to do so.
So we'll have all the links to the book and your website and your Instagram and social handles in the show notes of this episode. Thank you so much for taking the time out to chat with us. We've grown so much just from this conversation, and it's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you.
Oh, likewise. It's been wonderful. Thank you both so much. And Sarah, I'll see you down the tunnel soon.
Yeah, I'll see you. I'll see you at your house, and we'll invite Kimmy K over. Yeah,
bring a horse. Ride your horse over.
Done.
Workwives want to create a podcast for you, the brilliant, beautiful, talented, and tired working woman. We want to create content that will help you, inspire you, and set your soul on fire. So, how can you help us to help you?
Well, firstly, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it to be notified when we release upcoming episodes. It really helps the podcast gods to take notice and pick up what we're putting down for them, so it would really mean a lot to us.
Secondly, follow along on our Instagram at the.work.wives, where we can answer your questions and get to know you. We'd love to learn from you, listen to your stories, and hear about women who you think we should also bring onto the show.
And lastly, share this podcast with the women in your life and put the word out to work wives everywhere. The water cooler is open and we're ready for a global chat. Together with you, let's divide, conquer, and thrive. I'm Anna.
And I'm Sarah, and we'll see you next time.
WorkWives podcast acknowledges the traditional owners of country throughout Australia, and we recognise the continuing connection to lands, waters, and community. We pay our respects to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and to elders past, present, and emerging.